put your website to work while you play. A website works 24/7, so no matter where you are or what you're doing, people can still find you online. Start building your website today at GoDaddy.com. It starts with a .com domain. Enter promo code 199MYLF, that's 199MILF, at checkout to get your .com for just $1.99. Some limitations apply. See website for details. Sophie, and welcome to MILF Talk. Make your life fabulous. We like to talk about anything around here, from parenting and money issues to sex and dating.
Oh, sex and dating is
yeah.
good.
We like to make self-help fun. Not sure how fun it's going to be today, but...
Well,
well, hopefully this will inspire you or entertain you or teach you a little something along the way. I am a psychologist, life coach, mother of two, and author of MILF 101, Make Your Life Fabulous. I'm passionate about helping people live authentic... Be real, man, and joyful lives.
That's good.
Right? Get your joy on. So if you ever want to write to me and ask me an advice question, you can. You can find me on Facebook at Sophie Venable, or email me directly at makeyourlifefabulous@gmail.com. Hit me up for some free advice.
Yeah, hit her up.
Yeah. Listeners of MILF Talk, please welcome a man in the middle of an existential crisis, Todd Anderson.
Hey,
Todd's actually got some questions for me today. Okay,
yeah.
we're gonna do it. We're gonna go there. We're gonna talk about.
We're gonna talk about this.
Yeah, right. No, but it's actually a good subject to talk about. We're gonna talk a little bit about grief, right? And it's just gonna be all about life and death.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Gotta go there.
Death's
part of life.
We're going.
Do you remember when you first kind of figured out death? Do you remember the first experience, or like how old you were, like a dog dying, or
I think when my family pets when I was little died, it didn't really register like what that meant, but I do remember when my aunt Sue passed away. That was the first time I realized, oh, because she was, you know, my first person that I knew died, and I was like, oh, this happens to people.
Right. And how old were you, do you think?
Oh, I was in, I must have been in seventh grade, because I remember my aunt Peg came up to me at the funeral and said, I hear you're a thespian, because I had just done my first play. And I had never heard that word before. And I was like, what? No, I am not. Thank you very much. But as it turned
out, that's like the oldest theater joke in the book, right?
But it really happened to me.
Seriously.
It really happened to me. Yes. Yes. It really happened to me, which was funny. But
so that's what you remember about the funeral. That's funny.
Well, and I remember, you know, because Catholic.
Right.
Irish Catholic, open casket.
Yeah.
Which, you know, my wife doesn't care for that at funerals. But that's what
I don't either.
That's the way I grew up. So I almost need that for the reality of it to sink in for me.
Interesting.
Because I lost when I was the summer in between high school and going to college. A friend of mine was killed in a hiking accident, and because of the nature of his death, it was, you know, a closed casket.
Yes,
so I never got to see him, and I don't know, for a long time.
He was young. So that
that was horrifying.
No, that's something I've been struggling with this year, actually, too, because I lost a very dear friend of mine.
Who's
my age.
Yeah.
And you know, even in your 40s, you still don't really expect that, especially when they're so full of life and beautiful and they bring nothing but sunshine to anybody's world. And, you know, it was just a tremendous loss that I'm still, you know, struggling with, you know.
Yeah, those are the ones that happen that are young people, and it's a surprise, you know, like those really throw you for a loop. But I mean, even when you're talking, I mean, I'm going through it now because my father-in-law
just lost your father-in-law,
away.
Right?
So that is, I mean, and he'd been sick for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I don't know, it's still something that I have such a hard time wrapping my mind around, And it takes a long time for me to, like, if, you know, even if there's, because he didn't want to have a funeral or services.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you, because he very specifically said, you're not going to have a funeral. So not only did you not have an open casket, you haven't been to any kind of closing ceremony, essentially.
No, we're having a sort of gathering at my house this coming weekend with, like, friends of his and his son. My wife's brother's coming down from Washington to be there just to get, it's for ourselves.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, we trying to create some kind of sense of closure. But I mean, even when that's never really, there's something about it's grim, but there's something about, you know, open caskets that helps me with the reality of it. But it always takes me like weeks, months, even like years for it to like process out of me, like it comes in waves, and suddenly it'll hit me again. Oh, I'm never gonna see this person again, and that, I don't know, that's so hard to like.
That is the hardest part. That's what I keep going through with my friend, because we had plans,
right?
You know,
right?
And that's the issue. I had. I had quite a year in 2012. Actually, in 2011, it seemed to start. I lost the owner of our dance studio, who was very dear to me and somebody that I saw on a weekly basis for, you know, 7 or 8 years, passed in July. And it was like at the same time that I was taking my stepfather out for his, what we kind of figured was probably going to be the last time on his boat, you know? So it was a heavy weekend, you know, and very challenging. And then, 1 year later, my stepfather did pass. So this was July of 2012. 3 weeks later, my father, who has Parkinson's, broke his ribs. So that was the beginning of his decline. A couple weeks after that, Douglas Brady, who's my spiritual teacher and dear friend, died very suddenly, 60 years old. And then my father died in November. So it was one, like, just, and the interesting thing about my stepfather and my father is that they were both 85 and 86 years old, okay, respectively, and sick, you know. And so on one hand, which maybe you experienced this with your father-in-law, I don't know, I was kind of relieved for them.
Yeah,
you know,
I understand that.
However, it's been, I don't know, we're in 2014. It still kind of surprises me sometimes that I'm not going to see them, you know? And I have my stepfather's piano, which is a very precious thing to me. He played it for 70 years. And he was a dear man in our family. And I kind of just, I need that. Like, it's there, and it's those little Papa mugs on there. And I just kind of like, you know, and my dad's microphone, you know, we did music together. It's like I have those little things. Those are kind of what helped me feel like they stay alive in my consciousness a little bit, you know. But
are you where do you stand spiritually? Do you believe in an after world or afterlife, or
I don't think of it as linear.
I
wasn't raised Catholic. I was raised Sunday school Christian, not super. My dad and my brother were born again, but we were raised. But after my parents divorced, I was sort of raised agnostic for the most part, you know. And so I really didn't discover my spirituality until I was like 19. So I don't have the religion thing to recover from. But my grandmother's funeral was open casket when I was 11, and from that point forward, I never wanted to look inside another casket again because I was very upset about it. I didn't like it. But that doesn't answer your spiritual question.
No.
Sorry. Sorry. It just made me think, as you said, with the Catholic thing, it's always open casket. I sort of think of this as, okay, I'm going to share a story. A friend of mine got in a very slight skateboarding accident when she was young, 14. And she just, you know, hit her head on the ground and she was bleeding out. And she remembers watching.
She remembers.
She remembers sort of leaving her body and watching the situation.
Okay.
And she felt that she had a choice.
Stay or go.
To stay or go.
Yeah.
And she said, where I was really beautiful. She's like, it was really beautiful. Huh. And sometimes it's hard for her when life gets really chaotic that she had sort of made that choice, like, because she remembers the feeling.
That's such a common, you know, story that you hear.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never met anyone who had that, but...
But it was something really beautiful. She said she ultimately, she felt that she chose to stay for her little brother.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, this is so beautiful to me. She said, it's like you're made of water and you jump into water.
Mm. Yeah.
But she said, you do maintain your individual soul, she's like, you are your own. It's not like you just disappear into all the water. It's just, but it's like you've just come into something that's just,
yeah,
part of you. Like, it's all
right,
lovely. And there was something about that really just, it just spoke to me, you know. And I just thought, wow, that's sort of how, in my mind, I imagine that it would be, you know, that, mm-hmm, we're just kind of that we're kind of coming in and out of this plane, and that these bodies are kind of our vessels for our souls. And, you know, many philosophers throughout the years have discussed, you know, our existence, and either come to the conclusion that it is meaningless, it means nothing, and it's our torture as humans to be aware of our own existence,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Or that we're here to learn lessons, and that we're here, you know.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like that rings true for me, that we sort of come in and out of this plane, and we're here learning lessons about love, and about, you know, that we are connected by love. I don't think of, maybe 10% of me, I mean, you can't help what you're raised with, thinks of God as, like, you know, a man in the sky playing chess and with a beard or whatever.
Right.
But for the most part, I think of, you know, God, and I'm making air quotes, as love and this sort of
it's like
all one, like everything connected, kind of all one energy that we sort of move in and out of in this, like, we either have this form or we don't.
Right.
That's so when I think about death, I do sort of feel like my dad is just kind of on the other side of a wall there, or
right,
whatever he's decided to do as a soul. I don't know. Like, I don't know if he's,
right,
maybe he's back already. I don't know. But, you know, that there's just this kind of, but that we're always connected,
mm-hmm,
either way. But you don't always feel it. So it's not always that comforting.
No.
So even if you do think that, it's not necessarily comforting. I mean, I still will just be on the freeway and just cry about my friend Jenny. Like, I just can't stand it. I just can't,
yeah,
stand it.
Yeah.
That she's not here.
I don't have a defined system of beliefs because I was raised Catholic and ultimately didn't like it. And I didn't like what they were telling me I could and couldn't do, and the concepts of hell and heaven and all that. I felt it was all sort of fascist and awful. So I stopped.
Fascist. I don't know that I've ever heard it described as fascist.
Well, it's like, just if you do this, you're going to hell. You're going,
yeah,
to the oven. Yeah, right. Exactly. So it, I didn't like it. But I mean, I'm not an atheist, but I do have relatives who are. And
you play one on television.
I play one on television. Well, I am agnostic, I guess. Well, agnostic suggests Christianity, and I guess I'm,
oh, does
not
it?
Really, I think so. I thought
it was just that you kind of, you don't deny it, or,
yeah, but I think it's, you don't deny that there could be like this God in
God.
The sky.
Yeah, okay.
It could not be. I don't know. But
I think we're gonna have to look that up.
Yeah,
maybe I should have done some research.
It may be more loosely defined now.
Okay.
It's like, you don't know. I mean, I it's a logical way to go, I think, where there's no proof.
It's sort of, you know, Switzerland.
One way or the other. Yeah. It's like,
kind of neutral, keep you out of trouble.
Yeah, there's no proof one way or the other. But, you know, it's like when I have relatives who I see struggling because they're atheists, it like seems to hit them a lot harder.
Oh, the death?
Than it hits the faithful. Yeah. I mean, it's sort of,
yeah,
a tool
for coping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it's not there, I think death can be more devastating.
You know, I do. I have some friends that are atheist and really struggle with sort of the purpose and the meaning of being here. And so death is a really disturbing concept because it's just over. Like, when it's over, it's over.
Right.
And I can't say why. I mean, I guess you would call it faith, but it just doesn't ring true to me. That's all.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make it any better to lose somebody.
No.
You know? Because no. I'm also very of this earth. I'm tactile and I want you present. And
right.
You know?
Well, I mean, the other thing that I grapple with whenever I go through something like this is I grapple with my own mortality.
Right. And that's what we were talking about earlier is that this has really, really made you think about your existence and mortality.
Cause this is probably going to sound sappy, but I mean, I love my wife and hugging her and throughout this, like, I don't want to let go. And I don't ever want to, but eventually, I get it.
Believe me, the year that I was losing every older man in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, don't get in the car. Don't do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll wake up in the grip of losing somebody like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. So I do like to believe that there's like another thing and I can go and, you know, if I go first, I can go wait for my wife Hillary.
Yeah.
Just hang out till she's ready to hang out again, I guess. at the same time. And then, you know, I'm 42 now. And it is true that I was, you know, when you're young, when you're a teenager, when you're in your 20s, like that, it just, even though you know, like factually that it's a thing, mortality is a thing, it doesn't feel like it's actually going to happen to you.
Well, and thank God.
Yeah.
I mean,
once I hit 40, then I started having like these weird feelings of, oh, this is a finite thing.
Oh yeah, there's something about that.
Freaks
I think
freaks me
that's,
out.
You know, that's part of a multifaceted issue, which is the midlife crisis. But yeah, we learn. We kind of.
I bought a Ferrari.
Of course,
and,
you did.
And I hired like a bunch of hookers.
Excellent.
And went to Vegas. That's what I did. Midlife
of
crisis.
Course. Children tend to become a little bit preoccupied with death around 4 or 5 years old. You know, that if they're going to, they do, but then they kind of, you know, work their way out of it. But it's very normal if your 4 or 5 year old is kind of preoccupied or interested or worried.
Why does it happen that,
I don't know. I could go back into my textbooks and maybe find out, you know, what one of the great theorists, but it just tends to be, it's a common thing. I'm not saying it's like, you know, hopefully, you know, you move past that and you sort of feel that immortality and you don't worry about it. And then you turn, you know, and then until about 39.
Right. And then you're like,
and then suddenly. And I think, you know, for myself, I feel, you know, if you started to ask me about destiny and things like that, I'm very up in the air about all that.
You mean like if you have
a pre-planned kind of thing or whatever. But I know that I have sort of made a personal decision that I want to live to be 100. And I have made some sort of what feels like some kind of spiritual pact. I don't know how else to describe that I'm not leaving my children this time because I feel like I have left children behind before. I don't.
You mean when you're talking about high school?
Yeah, yeah. Like at some point, and I know it sounds crazy, but even in high school, in high school, people say, you know, do you want to have kids? And I'm like, yeah, I do. But I knew already, I was already deeply in touch with the fact that I would love them so much that if I lost them or left them, it would be the most painful thing I could experience as a human.
Yeah.
I knew that in high school. Sure. I was already like understanding that I was going to have to grapple with that fear, with that issue of like, if you have a kid, you have now volunteered yourself for a relationship that will devastate you should anything happen to them. Like, I have been keenly aware of that from a very young age.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why. That's all I can tell you. Anyway, but I feel like on some level that, no, I'm going to live a long time and I'm going to be here for my kids. I'm not leaving them. It's actually the only thing I worry about with dying. I'm not like, I'm not scared of what's on the other side. Mm-hmm. I'm not even scared if it was some like violent, painful death or something that would even matter once it was over. Like it doesn't, I don't know if how you die even really matters, because I'm not really worried about what's on the other side. What I worry about is the reason I drive safely. The reason I do things I do is because I don't want to leave my kids.
Right.
That's it. Like there's just like,
yeah, it's like that
my
makes
thing.
Sense.
That's my whole
that
thing.
Makes sense.
Yeah. You know? And, So I guess that would be maybe, I guess that answers the spiritual question of sort of where I'm at. Yeah, I do. So I do, I don't know if reincarnation is some kind of linear thing of like, oh, I was Cleopatra and now I'm Sophie or whatever. Like, I don't,
well, yeah,
you know, I'm not saying that.
Like a lot of people were famous in their past
lives.
Oh,
you're always famous in your past life. Yeah.
Why, you know, there is not that much fame to go around, you right. guys.
Exactly. So yeah, but the notion that souls are eternal, mm-hmm. and that love is eternal, mm-hmm. that rings true for me.
Yeah, I agree. I
still don't want to lose my boyfriend.
I've decided that I don't. You know, I'm not an atheist, but I've also decided not to define it to try and pretend I know what happens.
And do you feel kind of comfortable in that? Like, are you kind of okay with that?
I guess it doesn't always offer. I mean, it's like when I would look at my, you know, grandmother who was Catholic. I mean, mm-hmm. she had so much comfort in that. You know,
yeah,
she was going to Jesus when it was over.
Right.
And that like level of faith, I don't possess that.
Right.
So I do, when I think about it, I can freak myself out about it.
Oh, okay.
And mostly what freaks me out is the concept that the atheists are actually the right ones, that that's it.
Oh, over, that's yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you won't know.
Just like a turn. Well, I guess not. I mean, I guess not. But like, what if I did? Yeah, I guess you wouldn't. If they're right, it's just
if
over.
They're right,
who
it's
cares?
Just over.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Switch like a bug, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I just, I do think about that more than I ever have because I'm in my early 40s. And
you're in your early 40s and you just lost someone and you're looking, you know. You're looking at the how life is fragile in a way.
Yeah.
It seems when you lose a lot of people, the year that I lost so many people,
it's horrifying.
I was like, I had an anxiety about death that I hadn't really experienced before. And I also had I had like depression that I hadn't experienced before because there's a point at which like getting out of bed is just, there's just too much grief.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like so fucking painful.
Right.
And you know, when my dad broke his ribs like 3 weeks after Richard died, I was, because I knew.
Yeah,
I knew what was coming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. Yeah. And so I'm dealing with aging and I knew that, you know, Douglas had an issue, you know, potentially with his heart. Mm-hmm. You know, valve, but he was only 60. But still, I'm looking at people who, it's the natural order of things. You know, we live 80 to 100 years if we're lucky, and, you know, and hopefully you have a quality of life. And my dad really didn't have a quality of life at the end. And so, you know, these things feel like the natural order of things. But mm-hmm. there's still, you know, you still go through the shock. The five stages of grief are shock, mm-hmm. and or denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And bargaining is really part of that sort of bargaining for the power.
What is the bargaining?
Bargaining is it's a funny, I don't know why they call it bargaining, but it's the I'm going to kind of feel in control of the situation. Like, well, if they had just run that test, mm-hmm. then they wouldn't have died. Or, you know, like there's all of that, like there's all the sort of feeling like you can explain it or control it, or it could have been controlled, or that there's a reason that it happened, or there's, you know, feeling some sense of control, essentially,
right.
over
what you,
why or
what
how.
Do you, what do you, why, that control, what it, what is... What is fueling that? Is that your like control over your own mortality or the mortalities of those around you all of a sudden? Because I know that makes sense because when my friend died when I was a kid,
uh-huh.
you know, my first thing was denial for sure.
Of course.
Because my sister came down to my room and told me he was gone. And right. I was like, who told you that?
You know?
And she's like, my friend. And I was like, I know her. She's full of shit. Why would you believe a crazy phone call? You know, and my dad got mad at me because I was like ripping into my sister. He's like, calm down. Like I was instant anger denial thing.
Yeah.
But then I did the, you know, because it was a hiking accident.
Yeah.
And he was alone. And I was like, well, he went alone.
He went alone.
He shouldn't have gone alone.
Yeah. And I do think that part of that is that need for just the control over death itself and not having that anxiety, you know, around everything, you know. I mean, I just didn't want anybody to leave the house,
right?
I mean, and yet the people that passed in my life had like long-term illnesses and were older, and you know, and like,
well, that's what I'm saying.
But still, you know, I could hear my mom saying like, oh, you know, god damn it, they should have found this, or this didn't work, or this, you know, and just really struggling with the fact that it was his time.
Yeah.
And he lived 85 years, and the last 20 of them were awesome. Well, the last 19.
Right.
The last year was rough. But, you know, that they saw the world, and they had a beautiful relationship, and there were so many amazing things, and she just didn't want it to be his time.
Right.
You know, so that bargaining stage, very, very long time. I'm not really sure that she's in the acceptance stage.
She's still bargaining.
You know, I mean, and I understand it because I miss him terribly. When somebody's a really beautiful soul and they bring a lot to the table as far as, you know, how they make you feel.
Yeah.
You know, Maya Angelou says people won't remember what you say or what you do, but they'll remember forever how you made them feel.
That's true.
You know, and that is the truth. Take it from somebody who's been to an awful lot of funerals recently. People talk about how kind you were,
yeah,
and how well you listened.
Yeah.
That's what they talk about.
Yeah.
And they don't really talk about how much money you made or anything like that.
Right. Yeah.
But that is really your legacy. And
yeah, what is it they say about your deathbed? No one regrets you know, not making enough money.
Right. No one says like, I wish I'd worked more.
Although I'm going to make a point. If I'm cognizant on my deathbed, that's going to be the last thing I say, just to throw it off. You know, I really wish I'd made more money. And then just go.
And then everybody's going to have to remove that quote.
Yeah. And I guess that's not true.
From their Facebook page. Yeah. Because it's not true, because this guy Todd said it. I really wish I had made more money. I know. Yeah, I really went through my own kind of existential crisis with that, and really looking at, you know, even if I do live to be 100 or 80 or whatever, what am I doing while I'm here?
Right.
And I think that's kind of the question.
Yeah. You know?
And by the way, I should say this because I feel it's my responsibility, as long as we're getting on this topic. If you are in crisis, you do need grief counseling. You can Google grief counseling or crisis support in your area. And the National Suicide Hotline is 1-800-SUICIDE. That's 273-8255. And please, please reach out for help.
Okay. Yes, do that.
We're going to talk about stuff like this. We got to like let people know there's help out there.
Yeah, there's tons of it.
There is tons of it. I think that brings up an issue of, you know, when people die in your family, you have a loss, or even more difficult, I think, to grapple with is when somebody does commit suicide. Mm-hmm. That can be sort of contagious in a family. And also, people don't deal with death well in our culture.
No.
And nobody really knows what to say. And everybody's sort of concerned that there's a right or wrong way to handle death.
Right.
And the truth is, there is not really a right way.
It's like when you're the friend of somebody who lost somebody.
Yeah.
What do you say? Like you always say, if there's anything I can do, you know what I mean?
And then I
always feel like when I say, you know, if there's anything you need, let me know. I always feel dumb.
Right.
After
because
I say
you're like,
that,
are they really going to call me and ask me to go get groceries?
What the hell can I do for the, Yeah.
Most people can use help. Picking up their kids from school, or, you know, if you're able to do stuff like that, like sort of the day to day, because there's all this shit they have to deal with. Like, God, I mean, the day I had to go to the the mortuary and pick everything out with my brother. And oh my God, you know, that's not a day you want to be like jamming down the freeway trying to get your kid from school on time. And
no,
you got to allow yourself time. And how do I say it? You want to sort of give yourself room for your grief.
Right.
You know, to manage it. And again, we don't get a ton of like time off work in our culture.
No.
For this, you know, and people don't really know how to help. And sometimes you don't know how to ask for help or what you could need.
Right.
And so I'm here to tell you one of the things you could use mm-hmm. is somebody making some play dates with your kids
helping
pick them up or just giving you a little bit more room or time or, you know, giving you space to like cry for the afternoon.
Right.
You know, maybe picking up some groceries, you know, mm-hmm. maybe somebody could pick up some groceries for you or you could take somebody a meal. You know, that's a very common thing is that people will make a dish,
food,
you know, they'll make food for you bring it over.
It's more common. We did have a friend bring us some delicious soup.
Nice.
But I feel like that's a more common thing because that's how I grew up because mm-hmm. I grew up in small towns.
Yeah.
And that was super common. Like when that happened, then there would be a lot of food brought to you.
Right.
But that doesn't happen so much in the city.
Well, no, not in this city. I mean, even with births as well, you know, like a lot of my girlfriends and people in the birth community will try to remind people like, go ahead and make a meal schedule, you know, and bring people a meal because it's...
Yeah,
that's that's a shopping trip they don't have to do and a dinner they don't have to make for their kid, for their other kids or whatever.
Or takeout they don't have to order.
So it's because, you know, when somebody passes, there's some expenses. I mean, this is the thing. There's this big shift in the family and there's expenses and then there's just time and grief and explaining to the other children or the children, you know, whatever it is, the family has, you know, even just in the initial month or two that it happens, depending on, you know, how you do the services or whatever, they just have so much more to manage within all of this grief, denial, anger, bargaining, you know, figuring out. And what if it is like a malpractice thing? Then they're dealing with lawyers and they're dealing, you know, I mean, it just can get so hairy. And so anything that you can do to make the day to day a little bit easier, you know, bring a meal, bring something, you know?
Yeah.
That's one less thing on their list.
And you know what? In my personal case, you don't need to wait for someone to die. You can just bring me some food.
Yeah,
anytime,
good to know.
Be really helpful.
Good to know. Bring him a casserole. You're not gluten-free or picky or anything like that.
No, I'm not picky at all.
No,
I'll eat whatever.
You'll eat whatever. Yeah so
just
you're good.
Bring me a bowl of mac and cheese.
Just bring Todd food.
Yeah, bring me food.
That's why you wanted to do this.
So I can get some food.
Do you have a P.O. box or something they can drop it off at?
Food in a P.O. box. I wonder how that would work.
What has this all made you kind of contemplate lately? Just I know, I understand there's sort of the general anxiety about losing your loved ones, wanting to stick around.
My own mortality. But I mean, I think the thing that I'm realizing more, because this is, you know, It's. I remember when my friend died when I was a kid. I didn't cry until I was at his funeral. So, and part of the reason I didn't is I didn't feel like I deserved to have the grief, because I wasn't his best friend.
Yeah,
we were friends, but
I wasn't his best friend.
I wasn't a member of his family. And I feel that way on a certain level with, you know, my father-in-law, because this is something that my wife is going through.
Yeah.
And you know, and the other night we talked about it and I wound up crying. I said, I don't know why, you know, I'm not. But then I did and I felt better. And the other thing I'm just realizing is like watching her go through it. It's like my compassion for her is huge, and I just feel like there's not enough that I can do to, you know, and I know that like logically in the end it's about simply being there.
Yeah.
Like when you're a friend or a lover or whatever, the simple act of being there is all you can do and maybe all you need to do.
And sort of letting them have not only their grief but their joy.
Yeah,
like letting them have a good day, letting them have a bad day. And I think that that's really the hard part is that, you know, my dad, at his funeral, I was fine.
Yeah.
I did not look in the coffin. Okay. Right. I mean, everybody, my brother apparently just had just a giant bag of stuff for him. It was so adorable. Like, he gave him his wild turkey and his bacon and his this and his, I mean, he gave him all kinds of shit, like his Packers hat, you know, and my sister said it was just so precious. Like, it was great, you know, but I had nothing to do with it. I just stood outside and I chatted with people and I was fine because it just, it's, I know better. It's not my thing. I don't want to see him like that. But what I did was I made an 8-minute video. I took pictures from pretty much his, like, his whole life and our whole lives, and I included a song that I sang because I used to sing with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like three songs, and it ended with like the saxophone solo, and I had like a picture of him playing the sax. Like, it was a really, really personal process for me.
Mm-hmm.
So at the funeral, like, I felt like I was really connected to him, you know. That was my process. That helped me, you know. And I watch it like every year on his birthday. And so, that was me. I was fine that day. I was like in a good mood.
Mm-hmm.
Next day, fucking disaster.
Right.
I'm at Trader Joe's, just wanting to go, why are you all okay?
Why is everyone okay?
Don't you know?
Yeah.
A sweet man has left the planet. Like, how can you all just be here shopping?
Yeah.
How can you do that? Like, it was so, I was just a disaster.
Right.
You know, and then the next day I was fine. And then the next day I was a mess. So it's like being the loved one, like, you know, that you just have to give her room to be in whatever space she's going to be in.
Right.
You know, because God, it's like, It's just up and down.
Yeah, and it hits you in waves. It's not something you can get. I have a friend who doesn't go to funerals because he doesn't find them helpful. They're not how he grieves. He's like, I don't want to go to a place where for sanctioned grieving. I need to grieve in my own time. And funerals don't help him. They just make him uncomfortable. Yeah.
I think he has the right to that. I don't think it should really be considered disrespectful.
Well, and he has that problem,
has
though,
that issue,
where
right?
people are like, why didn't you come? It's disrespectful. And he's like, because I don't, like, he just doesn't do them.
I don't go to gravesites.
Yeah.
I don't go to gravesites. Yeah. When I drive by Forest Lawn, which I do, I'm like, hey, Dad. But I know he's not there. Like, it's not for me.
Right.
That for me is not where he is, you know?
Right.
And I think our job kind of as the friends and loved ones of people that are grieving is just to really kind of hold space for them to be whatever they're going to be.
Yeah, be there for them to just, that's what I'm saying. You're just there to be there.
I understand what you were saying though about that not feeling entitled to your grief or whatever.
Yeah,
you know? Because, you know, my friend Jenny, we were friends for 27 years, but there was a chunk of our lives where I was in her wedding and, you know, I mean, all this stuff. And I went to her second wedding but we just, because geographically, you know, we'd kind of like reconnected in the last couple of years, but I wasn't her daily best friend. I didn't know all the ins and outs of her life and, you know, and she met my kids a few times, but not, you know, and oh my God, like her passing just hit me so hard. Like it just kills me. And I'll just be driving down the freeway and just, all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, because I just want to see her.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that's what is left for us, you know, those left behind is like, I want to see you, you know? And so it's so, and you can't fix that. Like you can't fix that for Hillary. You're like, you know, you can't
fix it. That's what I'm saying. It's like, it is being like friend of somebody who's lost somebody. It can be a very helpless feeling I do want to fix it. I do want to make it all better. I want to do that somehow, but I can't.
Right.
So that can be very frustrating, but I think you have to, you have to let go of that feeling so you can just be there. And ultimately that's good, right? Is to be just be
yes, because sometimes in the trying to fix it, you can just say all kinds of wrong things.
Yeah, there's just Like in some
you're
situations,
really going to step in shit at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
certainly in this situation, but like in a lot of situations in life, sometimes there really isn't anything to say.
No. No, there isn't. And that's why, you know, you'll find that most people just say like, you know, my heart's with you're in my heart. I'm thinking of you and I'm just sending you love and I'm sending you whatever comfort, you know, that I can send you. And there's almost no right or wrong thing to say in the sense that I think a lot of people know that if you said anything, that was nice of you because it is so hard to know what to say. Yeah, like, at least you tried.
I'm super sorry. Yeah.
And we all know, eventually, we all know and experience that feeling of disconnection, of that, you know, how painful that is as humans. And that's why I sort of feel like it is our natural state to want to feel connected to everyone. And that's why we do grieve for celebrities we don't know or, you know, friends that maybe we weren't as close to. I had a dive friend die very young, and it was devastating. And I mean, I'd been on like a couple boat trips with him, you know, just a super fun, sweet guy.
And
and he didn't make it, you know. He went on a very difficult dive. He didn't make it. And you know, it was fucking tragic.
Yeah.
You know, and again, that feeling of like, I don't really deserve to have these tears. You know what? We're connected to people. We touch each other's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And even if your father-in-law just touched your life by touching Hillary's life, you know, that's all real.
Yeah.
That's all real.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think that, we sort of waste a lot of time, you know, sort of validating whether or not we can have feelings or not,
you know?
But, and it also, you know, I think it makes you think, like, has it made you think of, like, sort of what you're doing here and your purpose in life or your dharma or...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think about that sometimes. I mean, but I don't know what my purpose is. I just try to be nice to people. That's my basic thing.
Well, that's a good purpose.
Is to be nice and polite.
Well,
it's like, I don't have a lot of money to, like, build homeless shelters, but, you know, I can give a buck to a guy on the street or something. I just try to be nice.
Well, I think that's a good way to live.
That's all I can do.
I actually found a story.
Uh-oh.
Because, you know, I wanted to, like, have something happy
to tell you.
Okay. And it's really cool, and it addresses a lot of things we were talking about. In a senior living community in Davenport, Iowa, there's a group of residents, and they sew dresses for charitable organizations. So this woman, Lillian Weber, she kind of made it her mission to make a dress every single day for a girl in Africa. So she uses one pattern, but she makes every one of them a little bit different with like a ruffle or a bow or this or that, you know, so they're all unique in their own way. And by May 6th, which will be her 100th birthday,
uh-huh.
99 years old, she will reach 1,000 handmade dresses.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that sweet?
That is sweet.
So she's, and in the last 2 years, she's done like 840 of them. So, but what's really cool is there's a outreach group called Little Dresses for Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And they've sent out 2.5 million pieces of clothing since 2008. Lovely people from Michigan. They know how to raise people in Michigan.
Yeah.
And so they heard about Lillian, and they're going to personally deliver some of the dresses so that she can have pictures of the girl on them.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that reminds me of a story I just read about a guy. He's a barber.
Uh-huh.
And he, on his one day off, he spends the day giving haircuts to homeless people.
Aww.
In New York.
That's lovely.
Isn't that the nicest? His day off. He cuts hair for free. That's I like that story.
He's a better person than I am.
Yeah, well, I can't cut hair, so you're probably better.
Well,
off.
Then he's definitely better than you.
Yeah, yeah. Better at cutting hair for sure.
No, you're a good person. But I thought that was a lovely
story.
She sort of found some purpose in giving.
Yeah.
See, for me, it all comes back to love.
Yeah.
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 She's giving it.
Yeah.
She's loving people. I love it. So that's our show for today.
Okay.
You feel okay?
Yeah, I do.
All right.
I do feel okay.
All right. There's Kleenex here, but you look good. You're good.
Yeah, I'm all
okay.
right.
All right.
Keeping it together.
So if you want to help your karma, live your dharma, and you want to support MILF Talk.
Yeah, support MILF Talk.
You can go to Patreon, patreon.com/MILF Talk, and support our show. Even $1 per episode, I will send you personally a free book and thank you profusely. You can find me on Facebook, Sophie Venable, and find my book, MILF 101, on Amazon.com. You can find Todd on Film Pigs, which is on...
You can go to filmpigs.com
or
geeknation.com to see the Film Pigs web series.
Okay, and set your DVRs for...
You're the Worst.
On FX.
Thursdays, 10:30.
Yay. And thank you for being here, Todd.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
And pleasure as always.
Thank you for listening.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.